Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later on, we're going to be talking to DJ Melanie Moore about the multiform and myriad manifestations of being a DJ and Sex on Vinyl, which is coming up this Valentine's weekend. And we're going to be speaking to the good folks who are doing the Dear Diary presentation. Right now, I would like to welcome, joining us here in the cafe, Derek Brockbank from the National Wildlife Federation and Alan Hamilton from the New Mexico Wildlife Federation. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Yeah, nice to be here.
So the Wildlife Federations are national, state, and local organizations. What are you all about?
It's a really wonderful collaboration. It's kind of a three tiers of organizations that collaborate and work together. Derek here is from the National Wildlife Federation in Washington. They have members throughout the United States. And I'm the conservation director of the New Mexico Wildlife Federation, which is an organization of about 6,000 members and supporters of hunters and anglers throughout the state. And it's really an honor to be a part of that organization because it was started almost 100 years ago by Aldo Leopold. So we really pride ourselves on being sportsmen who have really developed a land ethic and an ethic about wildlife that's really based in our experience and our direct engagement with nature.
Are you a hunter or angler?
I am.
What do you hunt or angle?
I've been fishing for a long time, and I happened to get my first elk this year. And it was more than just a hunting experience. It almost felt like a marriage to me because of the commitment that I feel now and the responsibility to maintaining habitat and protection for those animals.
It's an interesting time that we're in when environmentalists, conservationists, hunters, and fishermen really have far more common interests than they do differences.
Yeah, that's right. And we're very nonpartisan. We have probably more Republicans than Democrats. We're really focused on the issue of wildlife and conservation, and that's what brings us together and makes us so passionate and committed about what we're doing in New Mexico.
Now, Derek Brockbank, you are working especially on global warming and wildlife, mm-hmm. and you're based in Washington, D.C.
That's right.
You're in D.C. What have you been observing in terms of attempted climate change legislation over the past years, and what's being attempted now that there's a change of administration?
In the past 2 years, we've started to see global warming legislation start to move in Washington, D.C. Last year, the Senate put forward a bill called the Climate Security Act, and it got up for a vote. In order to pass the Senate, you need to get 60 votes, essentially, to break filibuster. And there were 54 members in support, so it was a strong showing, but not enough to move forward. Since Obama has taken over and with the new Congress, we've seen even more movement on pushing for strong climate legislation. I think the economic stimulus that Congress is deciding on right now is a good down payment on transitioning us to a clean energy future. On the clean energy economy, but really to push us to a clean energy economy, we're going to need a comprehensive climate bill that will cap emissions and invest in a clean economy and invest in natural resources and wildlife and make sure that consumers are helped out with rising electricity costs.
When you talk about the stimulus package, what is in the stimulus bill or set of... mm-hmm. I mean, it's a big piece of legislation. What's in there that affects and tries to slow down or reverse climate change?
Well, there are literally tens of billions of dollars going towards investment in clean, renewable energy, in smart grid technology, which is to say the technology that brings power to the people. So it's not just creating power plants. It's actually making sure that the wind power and the solar power can get to our homes. And creating new technology for that.
Is it, by the way, when we're talking about wind and solar power, mm-hmm. are they really looking at more centralized solutions, or are they looking at people's rooftops, or what?
Both. Both. We do need to invest in large scale energy plants, so large scale wind farms, large scale solar plants. But there is going to need to be localized impacts. So whether that's getting tax credits for putting solar panels on your roof, or simply the major efficiency things that we can do, installing insulation, installing new, more energy efficient windows. So there's a lot of money for clean energy and energy efficiency. There's also a lot of money for helping our natural resources. There's almost $1 billion, depending on the House and Senate bill, going towards national parks to help national parks do proper natural resource management, making sure that native species are being planted and we're removing invasive species, making sure that
Does that actually affect global warming?
It has more to do with the impacts of global warming. We're already beginning to see impacts on wildlife species, whether it's ducks not migrating as far south, whether it's invasive species being able to thrive in a warming and changing climate. Climates that were once wetter are now drier. Climates that were once drier are now wetter. So it's making sure that the native species that we love, that we grew up with, are still there.
And that maintain the ecosystem in some kind of balance.
Exactly.
So let's talk more about impacts of global warming and climate change on natural resources, not only in the West, but across the United States.
Sure. Well, here in the West, probably one of the biggest issues is loss of snowpack, which results in loss of water in streams, which has a direct connection to both wildlife, the trout that live in streams, as well as the water we drink. Alan's doing a bunch of work on waterways here in New Mexico, and he might be able to mention a little bit more about that. But it also is affecting ecosystems across the country, from the Everglades in Florida, which are being submerged with rising tides, to western forest fires increasing in size and scope, to changes in temperature patterns, which are forcing animals to move towards northern latitudes and higher up in elevation to get to the cooler climates that they're adapted to live to.
And of course, as probably many or most people know, bears like polar bears that can't go any further north are having real troubles.
Sure. You've seen much higher incidence of polar bears drowning because they're literally trying to swim to the ice, which is too far away. So they're drowning before they can get
ice
out there.
Yeah.
And another great example in Minnesota, moose population. Moose are known to be throughout Minnesota, and the population is down to less than 400 moose in Minnesota. They're just moving north to Canada.
We're talking to Derek Brockbank of the National Wildlife Federation. Going back to the issue of snowpack, because I think it's important here in the West, are we getting less snow already because of climate change? Is that what's projected?
It's a combination of things. In some places, there is actually less snow. In some places, there's the same amount of snow, but it's warming up much quicker. And so all that snow is melting really fast. And so streams are flooded early in the summer, and then there's less water later in the summer. Now, if you're a trout that's used to swimming upstream, or a salmon that's used to swimming upstream later in the summer to spawn, it's very impactful.
And they can't swim early, they can't adapt to it because
it's just happening at a time scale that's unprecedented in history. We're moving it. These changes are happening in the course of years and decades when species need centuries and millennium to adapt.
Now, this is also, it not only affects fish and the area, the vegetation around rivers, it also affects our drinking water. I mean, as we know, there's only a few rivers in Colorado and New Mexico that supply a lot of the water that we use for agriculture and for drinking water.
Yeah, that's right. And even with the new diversions like the Buckman diversion that takes water from the other side of the Continental Divide from the Colorado River Basin that Albuquerque is already utilizing and that the Santa Fe hopes to tap into, those are essentially junior water rights. And so if there is a prolonged drought, it's not a given that those water rights are going to be, that water is going to be available for our cities.
So what besides the stimulus package are we looking at in terms of legislation in Washington, D.C.?
Well, in order to pass climate legislation, both the House needs to pass it, the Senate needs to pass it, they need to come to an agreement, and then the President needs to sign it. So it's a lot of things that need to happen. However, in the House, we are starting to see movement. In the House, Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, has said she would like to see climate legislation pass through the entire House by December. In the Senate, the chairwoman of the Environment and Public Works Committee, which is the committee that actually writes the climate legislation, that's Senator Barbara Boxer from California, has said she would like to see something move out of committee by December. So we really do plan on seeing legislation move forward in both the House and the Senate this year. With the right work, we could probably even see it move through both houses and come to the President's desk by December.
And what kind of legislation are we looking at?
Yeah, that is, the bills that are likely to be moving forward are what are called cap and trade legislation. And essentially what that does is the cap part sets a limit on how much pollution, how much global warming causing pollution the U.S. can put forward each year. And then industry can purchase the right to pollute. So they're called allowances. And they're put up for auction, and you can say you want to pollute X amount, and that's how much you'll pay for it. So that does two things. One, it reduces the amount of pollution that goes into the atmosphere, and you set that cap and you lower it each year, so we're reducing the amount of pollution.
And the amount that you lower it each year is going to be the hot bone of contention, basically.
That's probably one thing that will be. Science has said we need to begin to reduce pollution by at least 2% each year. So it will have to go down, but if you think about it, 2% is not a lot that needs to go down each year. We don't need to reduce it. You know,
that sounds actually low. I mean, I've heard scientific estimates that are a whole lot more than that.
I think it's sort of at least 2%. There's not full scientific consensus on exactly how much. I think the one thing that almost all scientists are saying is we need to start immediately.
We need to start 15 years ago.
We need to start 15 years ago, exactly. But since we have not, we need to begin as soon as possible, and we need to start reducing as much as possible.
Now, when we reduce, let's say we do incredible energy efficiency, we do cap and trade, and so on, what are we looking at being able to accomplish? Are the glaciers going to refreeze? Are the polar ice caps going to reform?
Anyone who's been to Alaska and has seen the glaciers can probably sense that they're not going to grow to the scale that we had them. We're already seeing impacts at a local level, at a global level, and those impacts will probably be with us for hundreds, if not thousands, of years. But we haven't yet reached a tipping point where there aren't opportunities to slow that and even stop those impacts from occurring. Science said, James Hansen, who is a scientist with NASA, and sort of one of the leading climatologists in the United States, said three or four years ago said we had about 10 years to act.
Right.
So we're getting down
to
the point.
Now we're down to 6.
Yeah. So we need to move quickly on this.
Where do we stand in relation to the rest of the world? Has the rest of the world started acting quicker than we have?
Most of the developed world has. If you look at Europe, they've already begun to look at policies to reduce their emissions.
Are they already reducing their emissions, do you know?
Their cap and trade policy, which they passed throughout Europe, has begun, started a couple years ago. Early results have been mixed. I think there's a big sense that the rest of the developing world doesn't feel like they need, it's unfair for them to have to act when the United States, which is the world's largest emitter of emissions,
right,
isn't getting involved. The big test internationally will be in December. There's a big international meeting which will look towards the future, sort of beyond 2012, to what international agreements can be dealt with. So which is one of the impetus for trying to move legislation in the U.S. before December.
Now, we have a cap and trade bill that has been introduced in the House during this current New Mexico legislative session, House Bill 653. Tell us about that.
Well, our governor has joined several other governors in the West, and they've created what's called the Western Climate Initiative. And Governor Richardson has told the Environment Department to do a study and gather the data necessary for New Mexico to be a part of that Western Climate Initiative. And the Environment Department has done just a fantastic job of putting this program together. And now we're at a point where if we're going to enter into this Western Climate Initiative, we need to pass some legislation that will allow us to make the rules to implement and get involved in that Western cap and trade program.
So it is an actual cap and trade program that would apply to New Mexico in partnership with all these other states across the West and including Canada.
That's right. I don't know exactly what states are engaged in this and how far a lot of them have moved towards actually implementing it. But it's critical, especially in the West, because of the natural resources and the oil and the coal. And we have both the capacity to develop lots of different kinds of clean energies because of the sun and the wind. And it's also a place where so many of the other resources like oil and gas and coal are found. So implementing a cap and trade program here is really critical, I think, to lowering some of the greenhouse gas emissions.
So the partners appear to be Arizona, British Columbia, California, Manitoba, Ontario, Montana, New Mexico, Oregon, Quebec, Utah, and Washington. That's a lot of people. And if everybody participates, I imagine, it seems to me, Derek, maybe you can speak to this, that a program like this really came to be in the absence of national leadership and because of the absence of national leadership.
I think that's right. You mentioned that science has been saying we've needed to reduce global warming pollution for the past 10, 15 years, and we really haven't seen that leadership at the national level. So states have taken it on their own to do this. There was a regional greenhouse gas initiative in the Northeast, which incorporated many of the New England and Mid-Atlantic states, that started just a year ago. And now we're seeing Western Climate Initiative take effect. And even in the past year, the Midwestern governors have been looking to do their own accord. However, ultimately, we're going to need to see federal legislation, which brings all the states together, so we can't outsource pollution from one state to another.
Well, I mean, if you have a power plant in New Mexico and a coal plant or whatever that's emitting, or they want to build a new coal plant, and then New Mexico becomes part of the Western Climate Initiative and Texas doesn't, then they'll just go over to the next state and make just as much global warming as they would have in New Mexico.
Exactly.
So there are legislative solutions being proposed and acted on, I think, pretty aggressively, we hope, both in New Mexico and on a federal level. What are some of the other ways in which the government in Washington is dealing with global warming? For example, is the Environmental Protection Agency involved?
It is. And under the Obama administration, the Environmental Protection Agency has been re-looking at whether or not to regulate carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases as sources of as pollutants that should be regulated under the Clean Air Act. The difficulty in actually doing that is that carbon dioxide is everywhere. It's not a very isolated pollutant like sulfur dioxide or nitrogen oxides, which are regulated under the Clean Air Act. However, they do have the authority or are considering having the authority to do that. So if Congress doesn't step in the next year or two, we could see a situation where the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, actually decides to regulate carbon dioxide.
We've just got a moment or two left. There's also some proposed, not so much legislation, but a memorial in the New Mexico legislature, which speaks to the situation of rivers and streams in New Mexico.
That's right. We're working on a House Memorial 3, which is a memorial that would propose that there be a study done in terms of understanding environmental flows in our rivers and streams, and what's necessary for these streams to be considered vital and alive, where they're not degraded to the point where there's no longer a vitality, there's no longer integrity in those ecosystems.
And fish can't live in them and so on.
Right. And the rivers, it's more than fish, because the rivers and streams in New Mexico are where a majority of our wildlife and our wildlife habitat are, and where these animals tend to move and to migrate, are corridors that are the easiest for them to migrate through because they're not as fenced and they aren't bisected by as many roads and all. So these protecting our streams really becomes one of the priorities for us in the state in terms of, especially in light of the impacts that climate change could have, to make sure that those systems are maintained to a level that can support the important wildlife in our state.
And so this is something that we will report on more as time goes by during the rest of the New Mexico legislative session.
I hope so. There's a real good faith effort and of a lot of people coming together to try to pass this memorial. And I think it would be a fantastic starting point in terms of really looking at how to protect these critical areas.
Alan Hamilton is with the New Mexico Wildlife Federation, and Derek Brockbank is in town visiting from the National Wildlife Federation. Anything you want to add before we go?
I think we have great opportunity to move our country towards a clean energy economy this year by passing climate legislation. And some of New Mexico's federal representatives are going to be key to this. Senator Jeff Bingaman is the chair of the Energy and Natural Resources Committee. He's been a longtime champ for wildlife and natural resources, and we're going to need him to be a champion on global warming.
Ladies and gentlemen, you can make your calls and influence your legislators both on the national and the state level. That's what we're all talking about these days here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. Derek Brockbank and Alan Hamilton, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.